related to the super grant project, which involves a loan that was given to the four cooperatives. Working relationship between Supergrain, who is supposedly the technical partner of the cooperative, and the cooperative, is that what was discovered by the cooperative was that the relationship was not good. Whereas in the report, the financial report of Supergrain, which was presented to the community, that project was reflected as a flagship project that was doing well, and which was a pilot in terms of SNIPA, which then had to be replicated, the model. But when the portfolio committee visited the project, they didn't see the positive aspects of that project. In terms of the department, the issue was around the CI, where the portfolio committee identified that the funding was not, the funding model was not structured in a manner that creates a positive impact on cooperatives that were funded, but also what was of worry to the portfolio committee was that some of the projects that we have not received that funding, even the manner it is structured, it doesn't meet the cooperative who is actually the recipient of the grant, and is designed to assist with the cooperative. But at the end of the day, the cooperative has got no control on that grant. People that have got no control are service providers. But over and above that, when we follow up on the impact, we don't see the development aspects that we are supposed to be seeing. And we felt that there was a need to investigation. So the decision that we took was that the portfolio committee was going to do its own forensic investigation. However, we appreciated the fact that when CIFA saw that report with that recommendation, CIFA on its own instituted its own investigation. We want to put that on record that we appreciate that. That CIFA did a good thing by instituting its own investigation so that at the end of the day, when we look at the recommendations, the issues that the portfolio committee identified and the forensic investigation, the report and the findings of the forensic investigation instituted by CIFA and the forensic investigation instituted by the portfolio committee, we can arrive at common issues and also work together to find a solution, because SAFA will also have done its own forensic investigation. The portfolio committee would have done its own investigation, forensic investigation, and therefore the problem and the root causes of the problem would be thoroughly discussed, not from a perspective of us and them, but from a common perspective. And then the possible solutions would also be discussed. So we really appreciate that. What we also want to appreciate is that the time taken by SAFA to respond to that recommendation, we really appreciate that. Because you did not wait to see a report of a forensic investigation conducted by the person. You did that fast enough, and when you had done so, you also approached the portfolio committee. We did not invite you. You came to us and said, we have done this investigation, we have a report now at our disposal, and we want to engage, to present this report to the portfolio committee and discuss it. I think that is good governance. If all the boards were to operate in that way, each other, the department has not come back to us. So that is what we are going to be doing today. We have put on item number one, the briefing by the enterprises. The reason for that was that we wanted also to have both DIFA and the department meeting together, so that by the time we move to get to discuss the litigation and also to discuss the forensic investigation report, we at least have more information about challenges. Because the portfolio committee looks more at the services, the relevance of the services to the people that those services are designed for. And in finding solutions, you should then find solutions that address either the gaps in the support services that are given to those to SMEs and corporates, meaning that if the support services are putting SMEs and cooperatives in a worse situation or are affecting them negatively, what reforms can be done to facilitate a situation where the support services that are given are actually speaking to the felt needs? Bearing in mind that the department is the department for small business development, developing SMEs and cooperatives. Development means you assist, you create an environment that is going to enable this person to grow from being an infant to being a toddler, from being a toddler to being being a teenager, from being a teenager, from being an adult. The same applies to SILFA, to say our funding model should take into consideration the target group that we are dealing with, and then package the financial services with a consideration of the development stage of each SMME and the cooperative, which is why there is SIFA for financial services and SIDA for non-financial services. SIDA who will then come also on board to address the issue of capacity of SMEs and cooperatives, because the key word here is development. And we also do that appreciating of the fact that more jobs in any country are created by small businesses. Also appreciating of the fact that those who choose to self-employ are in some cases people who can't be employed somewhere else. And then they choose to self-employ themselves, meaning that they operate from a mode of self-reliance. They don't want to depend. And if we look at the South African situation, we have more people who are operating on the dependency mode. Government has to intervene and take care of them through social grants, through RDP houses, because they can't build, they can't provide themselves with their houses, through basic water, through basic electricity, through school nutrition program because the child cannot eat at home, through scholar transport because the child, the parents can't afford the transport and the school is far away from where the child lives. All those things are a welfare. Government intervention is to look after those people. For government to be able to look after those people who can't look after themselves, government has to tap those who are working. And if there are more people on the welfare side and less people on the productive side, the situation is that government will keep on increasing the tax in order to look after the non-productive side. And when that happens, the investors will move out of South Africa because South Africa is taxing more. It's got more taxes in order to take care of those that cannot take care of themselves. So I'm making this so that when you are put in a space of funding small businesses, you should have that understanding that what is being addressed here is to reduce the number of people who depend on social grants and free government services and move them from the welfare side of expenditure to the productive side of the expenditure. And in doing that, therefore, a DFI will have different policies from the policies of commercial banks. Because commercial banks are giving loans to people who are on the productive side. DFI are providing loans and support systems to the people who are bordering on the welfare side, who want to move from the welfare side and come to the productive side. I thought that it is very, very important for us to understand this background so that we move from a common perspective when we develop policies as the department, when we develop policies as the board of FIFA, and when we develop policies as the board of FIFA. Now, the challenge that we then have in relation to the first presentation is that two of the enterprises who are supposed to be here missed their flight yesterday. They are coming in this morning. We only have one who arrived yesterday. That then puts us in a dicey situation as to what is it that we are going to study. But having said that, let us then go back to the program and deal with the issue of apology. Can you take the apology?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, colleagues. Good morning, Chairperson of the Board. Chair, I have received the following apologies. This is the apology of Honorable Bewa, who is with the Portfolio Committee on Tourism, conducting oversight in Limpopo. And then I also have an apology of Honorable Bafa, who is in the oversight with the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries in the Northwest. And also have an apology for Honorable Mwabe, who is in the oversight with the Portfolio Committee on Intelligence. And then I had an apology of Reverend Michel, who wanted to leave at 12 and come back for the afternoon session. So I didn't receive an apology from Honorable Mlaudi.
Yay!
He is on time to leave. Thank you, Chair. Oh, lastly, on the side of the Secretary, for an apology of Mr. Kumete, who was gone attending the training.
Followed by Honorable Mabaso, Honorable November, the Parliamentary Lady Officer. We have the head of Honorable Laud in that order.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I'm also allowed to leave the meeting just for a while, I must go and pick up a parcel in Musenberg, which was supposed to be delivered yesterday. So if you will just excuse me for a while. That's the one point. And can I come back to the agenda at this stage, or must I wait until after the apologies? First apologies.
Apologies.
Okay.
I want to post my apology and attend by 2 o'clock.
Yes, morning, Chair. Just really apologize on behalf of the Minister. It's a cabinet meeting today. Thank you.
Apologies for the DG, unfortunately, we couldn't make the meeting today. Chair, he has some meeting that she has to attend today. today. Unfortunately, it was well planned way ahead, this engagement. I was informed yesterday that in terms of the parliamentary program, this meeting was actually called later on because there was supposed to be, I think, a visit overseas by PC. So she actually had to schedule something to that effect.
We accept the apology, but I want to comment on the one proposition. The priority for the DJ, she is an accounting officer of the Department of Community. When the portfolio of community arranges a meeting that requires an accounting officer to come to the portfolio committee, more especially if the issue is forensic investigation, the accounting officer's first call is to Parliament and to any administration. Whether the meeting was called last night, she could have delegated that other meeting and prioritized it. So the message that we are sending is that the accounting officer, who is the DG of the department, first call to Parliament, not any other meeting. So I will write a letter and raise that issue with the DG that from where we sit, she should have dedicated someone to that meeting and come to this meeting. Because this meeting is not only about FIFA, it's also not about the department. This meeting is about the 9 million people of this country who are not employed. This meeting is about ensuring that services that are provided to those people enable them to come out of poverty and create the 9.9 million new jobs by 2030. This is what this meeting is all about. So if the portfolio committee is suspecting that there is something untoward in terms of providing loans, which undermines the pro-poor agenda, the DG should jump out of the bed and come to this portfolio committee. So that is the message that we are sending. Thank you. You had something to say in relation to item number, the briefing by the enterprise.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start indicating to say according to the premise that we have sent this and the
Honorable
Kovac? Yes, Chair. I just want to say something about the program or the agenda. last Wednesday, we discussed ICAD and the pilot project, and ANC asked us to give them a week chance to come back to this meeting, you know, to think it over, what have you. So, and I don't see it on the agenda. So I'm just wondering, when are we going to discuss the pilot project? Thank you, Chair. Because it's also about creating job opportunities. Very important.
The letter from the minister relates to FIFA response on litigation cases and litigation strategy. It relates to that. Thank you very much. We will start with the presentation from the enterprises, and we are going to ask. Thank you, Mandy, for writing that letter. Of this portfolio committee. I think that your letter would have been long addressed if you knew how to approach this. It should be to write a letter to the chapter team initiator.
I should have done it the way that you are saying that I should have done it, because the time that has gone by, or the time between when I submitted the letter and getting a meeting from myself was really less than 2 weeks, to be honest, let alone just responses to what I had sent. I had written something quite lengthy, but when I looked at the agenda, I realized that there were going to be three of us. So I hope I'm not doing myself an injustice by summarizing the main areas that I have wanted to cover. In so doing, I have broken up our briefing into three main areas. And just so that I don't go off point, because it was lengthy, like I said, I've just sort of like bulleted points. I'm hoping that I will be able to print or send it to you for you to print and circulate, or just circulate this briefing. I'm just going to give a background summary of the transaction itself and its origins, before going into a lot of the things that actually went wrong, a lot of which were communicated to FIFA Deepa's executive, and I'm sure the CEO has what would make a Bible in terms of the emails that I had kept sending both to him or was copying him on. So just to give a background summary of the transaction itself, the transaction was export driven and intended to, you know, to be piloting or some sort of a pilot rather of a project that would become a foreign exchange earner for SMMEs, where we, our company is RazorScan, where we, RazorScan, we're going to procure locally grown fruit from South Africa and export it to the United Arab Emirates, earning US dollars in the process. FNB bought into the project through the seasoned assistance of the then group CEO, Susan Masana, and set up a team to actually work with us as RazorScan on the transaction. It was more guidance, more than anything, as they were experts in trade and supply chain transactions. And obviously to ring fence any risks. Takani Makuva, the CEO of CIFA, also welcomed and expressed support for this when I initially started it. Just to go back, we chose fruit exports. That is what South Africa is known for, basically quality fruit. It was the one commodity that was not going to take too much marketing to land any sales as our fruit is sought after. So we were looking for a project that would not be heavy on marketing. The importer, Floral Fruit, was based in Dubai in what is called the Alaware Fresh Produce Market. It's a municipality-owned food market, just like the Joburg and Cape Town food markets, and I believe all the others around the country, Bloemfontein, etc. We obviously also had to identify a supplier. The supplier then was FRM Fresh, getting tongue-tied here, sorry. That was a registered fruit exporter, and we sourced these suppliers or engaged them through the Cape Town Fruit Directory, an exporter's fruit directory. Where it's got fruit, made some of the major fruit exporters at least from Cape Town and the surrounding areas. And at the time, this particular company had partnered with Cosmo Fruit, that I will talk about a little later on in the supply of fruit. So basically, a summary of the transaction, it was the usual import-export trade transaction where the buyer would place an order with RazorScan, and we would fulfill it through our supply chain, which is the food supplier itself, freight forwarders, vetting agencies, etc., etc., etc. And we would use for vetting companies such as SGS TUV. Citco is another vetting company, but it was the preference of the supplier. And our registered freight forwarder then was Hellman. FNB in the transaction would receive and manage the documentation and also the payment process, because the bank account to which monies were coming in and going out was controlled by FNB, underpinned by an agreement of agreements that we had in place. There was an agreement, a collection trade agreement that I had with FNB. And FNB had its own agreement with CIFA, and obviously I also had an agreement with CIFA. There were other contractual obligations that we had. I would prefer that we hadn't gone into them, but they were required between the supplier and ourselves, and also the freight forwarders, and also the buyer that was based in Dubai. Like I said, I'm going to break it up. There are three main areas. The first one would be the pre-loan approval one, and the second one would be the pre-loan approval two, And the third one, obviously, now is the legal debt collection process and the court process that I suppose is what is taking place now. The pre-loan one, the reason why I have pre-loan one and pre-loan two is because the pre-loan approval process, the first pre-loan approval process, culminated in the loan being denied. Then there was a revisitation again, and I'm calling that pre-loan approval two, where the loan was approved, and then obviously I'll go into that third point, the litigation issue. The pre-loan approval one was nothing out of the ordinary really in the beginning, in that we had to provide financials and a business plan and everything that was cited in the CIFA application as requirements. Over and above that, there were other contracts. Like I said, contracts with the supplier and contracts with the buyer, contracts with the freight forwarder. The problem with going into contract at that stage when the money is not on the table is that you run into the problem of having to amend those contracts many, many times based upon a guess or a guesstimation coming from CIFA to when they think the process is going to be concluded. The process, like I said, was very, very protracted, and it was really being done or being run by myself and F&B jointly because of the hand-holding guidance exercise that was coming from them. Again, I've really tried to summarize. That process also included the viewing of fruit by CIFA, where CIFA visited the marketing office of this FRM Fresh company, where they were hoping to see fruit. And because they'd come to a marketing office, they didn't see any fruit. Another appointment was made for them to go and see the fruit in a cold storage facility, which is really a controlled environment. So going to a cold storage facility does require special arrangement. And in that, this was my first major showdown with CIFA in that, and together with the supplier, in that they were a no-show. They didn't show, nor did they give reasons for why they did not come for the viewing of the fruit. I'm saying F&B and myself got the tongue lashing again from the then supplier who we were talking to, FRM Fresh, who just chose to bow out of the transaction and felt that it should be revisited at a later time. I suppose due to his frustrations with CIFA, I kept giving him one excuse after the other, the main excuse being, I mean, this is a pilot, it's the first time for everyone, CIFA's new to it, I'm new to it. Although for him, setting up appointments and not showing up to those appointments has nothing to do with whether you're a first-timer or you're new to a process. It was just a matter of courtesy. I think that's where the problem was. So even then, I'm going to talk a bit about this because it has become an issue that played itself out in the papers, because I did end up going to the Mail and Guardian. In fact, they contacted me on this particular matter, not because of CIFA. The entry point was not CIFA. The entry point with them was the supplier who seemed to have duped a lot of people, even very, very big suppliers. But I'm going to harp on it because it is indeed true that CIFA had to confirm when they're dealing with suppliers in transactions like this, they do have to you know, do some sort of vetting of the supplier and making sure that the supplier is who he says he is, and secondly, that the supplier does actually have what they say they have, which was the reason why they'd actually gone out to see this particular supplier. But, you know, there were so many points, a lot of which I have sort of like omitted here, so there's, it's sounding a little incoherent, I know, I'm really trying to shorten it as much as possible. But there was a lot of back and forth where we also felt that our time was being wasted deliberately. And I then started talking to small business support structures. I do believe I approached Mr. Chang on more than one occasion, who did try and light a fire under CIFA and repeatedly wanting to know where the delays were. So even after all those processes, you know, the loan was denied. And I do remember you had also stated that you were in support of CIFA because there's no way that we could expect CIFA to give us a loan with a profitability of 0.04%. This was a total shock to me and FNB because we had done the calculations, you know, to within, I think, I don't know, 0.0001 standard of deviation, I suppose. But it became a shock. It was a shock to both FNB and Razorscale. So we demanded, actually, I remember, we demanded a meeting with CIFA because we could not believe that this was the reason why the loan was denied. And we met with CIFA at the IBC offices. I believe one it was the executives who were there. It was Rian, I can't remember. Rian and Bongani Mtono and I forget the other two gentlemen, plus also Pai Pai Malachi, who was my accounting officer. But it turned out, after all of this, going to see, you know, making appointments, going through financials, requesting contracts with overseas buyers, freight forwarders, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that, you know, of all the things that the loan is denied, based upon profitability, something that we thought we had long crossed over. And we demanded a meeting, and we had the meeting, and FNB and I did the calculation. The calculation took no longer than 3 minutes, where we were actually showing CIFA how the profitability works. And I remember in the meeting, at the end of that meeting, Rian just saying, oh, so we are the ones that messed up. You know, it's a matter of, just sort of like as a matter of fact, after all the delays, we have a meeting, we discuss it, we discover that it's because of low profitability. And we even thought that was a cop-out. There had to be some underlying reason. And when we did the calculation, we showed them that, you know, they were completely off, and they agreed to it at least. But what angered me also is that after that meeting, they asked FNB to leave, and I stuck around in the meeting, and Rian and Bonga were saying that, you know, we don't want this to appear as if we're deliberately being hard on you or deliberately wasting all your time and so forth, because we've also been hearing that you're talking to people. At this juncture, because of the time wasting, I do remember having called the chairman of CIFA, Dr. Rensberg, Sizeka Rensberg, and obviously Mr. Chance, Toby Chance, who had also been talking to CIFA. And I believe I'd also written a letter to the minister, because I think now I'm now losing, I was coming to a point where I'm now also losing suppliers who are fed up. I'm fed up, and I realized that after all of this, that the reason is not even there. It's just a made-up reason that the loan had to be that the loan was denied. Anyway, I was then given a battery of things to fulfill, points to fulfill, to get things back on track. This is when CIFA has discovered that or said, quote unquote, that okay, so we are the ones who have messed up. They gave us a battery of things to fulfill, and that's basically loan approval process too, which is really a continuation of the denial phase of the first loan. So we're basically just revisiting the transaction. And I had already communicated the supplier that, you know, it looks as though this loan is problematic. We may just have to shelve it. But then I still continued with those points that FIFA had given me. At this juncture now, one has got to be searching for suppliers and hoping that they're still interested, for one, in the transaction. I went back to the same FRM Fresh. And FRM Fresh, was not in the country at the time. I know I'm talking to FRM Fresh and Cosmo Fruit. At the time, they were partners. So when I didn't find FRM Fresh, the Cosmo Fruit partner responded immediately. So therefore, I started dealing with the Cosmo Fruit supplier, who was, you know, more than willing to get the ball rolling, obviously for his own reasons that we got to find out much later on. The loan was approved finally with special conditions, and those conditions were really honing in on the vetting process. That process being an entity that is separate from Cosmo Fruit and also separate from Razorscan, an independent body basically, that would attest to the fact that the fruit is actually there. And what they requested then was a letter from that particular company. What I want to also add is that at this particular point, when the process has been going on and dragging on for such a long time, there was a sense of urgency. I mean, a sense of urgency is obviously relative in this case, considering the fact that it has taken so long. Between the supplier saying that, you know, if I don't get this fruit now and all that, it all sounded reasonable, even to myself. Maybe Evan was a little doubtful, but it sounded reasonable considering where we had been coming from or where we were coming from in the transaction. So the supplier was even in some instances communicating directly with FIFA to basically not short circuit as such, but to basically fast track the process, what is needed, what should we do, etc., etc. And where this letter is important, where this vetting process was compromised also and was highlighted in the Mail and Guardian article that I had posted when I got an investigative reporter to basically look at it, was that the supplier was talking directly to FIFA, and the crafting of the verbiage in that letter was really done by FIFA, because this is what FIFA was saying. They wanted to see it, even though the supplier kept urging them, look, we need this. I need this done now. Again, I'm speaking to an article that's already in the paper. I need this done urgently now. And, there was that rush process. And then the verbiage, that same verbiage was put on a letterhead, the FITCO letterhead, and sent to FIFA. At this juncture, I was actually being copied because I did understand that we were trying to fast track a process. So I was copied on this letter, but I was, as soon as I also got it, I also said, FIFA, it seems like this is what the letters come from Citco, you know, let's basically proceed now with the transaction, because it was about now the releasing of funds. No, the funds were already released into my bank account, but it was about instructing FNB to release the funds, because I didn't have control over the money itself. FNB must now release the funds from the account, which is a collateralized trader account, into the supplier's account. Now I discover, I'm going to digress a bit, because I discover at a later meeting that FNB and I had insisted having with FIFA, when we were now realizing that things were going wrong, that FNB had been totally against. I mean, with me they'll say that reservations, but when I got into that meeting, FIFA and FNB were having basically an argument from hell, where they were pointing fingers at each other, raising each other's voices, and I'm like, oh, so this is what was going on between yourself and FIFA. There was finger pointing between the two of them. But nonetheless, it was showing that FNB was actually against releasing this money from the get-go, and it highlighted to FIFA why they were against releasing the funds. Now, I couldn't 100% go against FNB, because after all, I approached the group CEO, Mr. Nwasana, to have a team work with us, and that team is the expert team. We've got to sort of listen to what it is that they want to be saying, despite the fact that we all wanted the transaction to be concluded. At least I wanted the transaction to be concluded. FNB always had its reservations. But nonetheless, that letter that was sent to FIFA and was given to me was a fraudulent letter. And I then asked the account officer, Pai Pai Malati, how could it be a fraudulent letter when, of course, you've received the letter, you it's a phone caller where you call and you find out, is this letter, you wrote a letter, such and such and such, did you write and sign this letter, et cetera, et cetera. The number was there. Pai Pai told me that, of course, we do that. And it was a blatant lie. They had never called Citco to verify that letter. And they started moving away. FIFA started moving away. I don't know if they were trying to protect themselves. They started moving away and started creating a scenario where, you know, that was your business to verify. I'm like, that's absolute nonsense. You told me initially, in fact, when we look at the Cape Town scenario, you specifically physically went out to the marketing office and you made it clear to me that, no, we have to. And I thought this was a time-wasting exercise. I mean, you could have done it differently with DeVault, but you, CISA specifically said, no, we have to do this. We have to also check out these suppliers. That's them. And obviously, there's nothing out of the ordinary about that, because if you don't check out suppliers, then you're in trouble. And as an entity that is going to be giving millions to those suppliers, for them to suddenly do a 100% turnaround and say that it was my issue or it was my problem to check out the third party was preposterous. But the other thing was that they had vouched and said that, no, we called. And Piper said they called. I know it was a lie, they never called, because Citco does not ever remember having any telephonic conversation with CIFA. And if that is the case, that's what CIFA should actually have done that. Called and said, okay, fine, it would have been a two-minute call. Did you send this letter? Did you not send this letter? End of story, the letter is good and all that. Why? Because Mendy, myself, and the supplier, there's a scenario where me and the supplier could have concocted this letter, or could have tried to dupe CIFA. What about a scenario like that? But anyway, this is basically way after the fact. where it is discovered that the letter is fraud, and how we picked up on it is when FNB is now requesting documentation after the first container, delayed container of fruit has gone out. And the documents that come back, because FNB was also going to be looking after the flow of documentation coming from the shippers, which were really the bills of lading, showing that this fruit was delivered to the client or is en route or, you know, to the client and is and has been containerized. The paperwork that came back was off. It was the wrong class of fruit, and the quantities were not adding up. And we knew with FNB that this particular fruit buyer was very, very picky about the class of fruit, that they only dealt with class one type fruit. That's when FNB said to me, I always suspected, and I told CIFA about this guy, that there's something not right. He's too, I've forgotten the word that he used, but we kind of thought it was just a personality issue. But, you know, it's something that FNB kept highlighting. So that's when we picked up that something was wrong, and that's when I decided to start looking at everything in the transaction, and I started with CITCO. Because in my opinion, if CITCO has said that class one fruit is there and that there's the equivalent of 15 containers, why isn't that fruit going off? So I started with CITCO and approached them, and CITCO was totally confused about what I was saying. And what happened was the supplier, realizing that I'm investigating what was going on the CITCO. No, in fact, just before I talk about the CITCO issue, I realize I've really tried to narrow this. Before we even get to that CITCO issue, I talked to Devout, mayor of FRM Fresh, and I said, Devout, we're having this problem now with FNB, with your partner Cosmo Fruit. At the time, he was in London, and what Devout said is, you know, you'll be lucky if you have any fruit, if that fruit is there, or the money is there, something to that effect. And that he then said, it is likely that letter is fraudulent, because CITCO is actually a very good company. I don't think they've done anything wrong. That's what prompted me to actually go into the CITCO matter and start asking CITCO whether they'd actually written this letter. And CITCO said, yes, we did write. The confusion was that CITCO had written a letter. But that letter was not worded the way in which CIFA had wanted it to be worded, and therefore it was reworded in the way in which CIFA wanted it to be reworded by the supplier. And there were other things that came to the fore that I didn't pick up, and obviously the CIFA did not pick up. This was picked up actually by the Mail and Guardian, that the stamp on the very letter, the first thing that should have happened, anybody requesting a document and is looking at the document, even before investigating the document or calling, would have picked up that the stamp did not belong to any South African company. It was a series of Greek letters and all sorts of things. It wasn't your standard South African company. So that should have been the first alarm bell. That's what was glaringly obvious, that this could not be an authentic document just because of the stamp itself. Outside of the verifying of that very, very, very letter itself. So after this matter, we decide with FNB that I think we need to have another meeting with CIFA. We had another meeting. We called another meeting for some time in December. This was around about the time that at least two or three containers were supposed to have gone out. And we all decide CIFA, and the, I know there was a gentleman from IDC who was there, FNB and myself, we decide we are going to have to call the supplier out and find out, you know, what is going on with the fruit. And we all made a phone call, or well, just one phone call, but with all of us sitting around the table, we made a phone call to the supplier. It was actually FNB, you know, where, you know, the supplier was basically almost telling us off, to be honest. And after that phone call, we decided, okay, fine, it's clear that this guy has he has stolen this fruit, and we're not going to see the money, despite the fact that he said sometime in January or something that that's when he would give us the he would make good on the contract. I remember the conversation I was having. I was having it with Mr. Maboa, Paul Maboa, who I believe is some sort of a legal representative at CIFA, I'm not sure. But Mr. Maboa said, look, I think I should make an appointment with the NPA. The gentleman's name there was Mr. Mkhwebi. And he just felt at the end that, no, he would get me the contact details of Mr. Mkhwebi, because at this juncture, we're all in agreement that we've been had, and this is best, etc., etc., etc. Then I went and met the NPA a week or two later with Mr. Mkhwebi, who decided that I suppose it's probable cause to move forward on prosecuting the supplier, because we all felt it was blatant theft. After that meeting. There's also a lot of other stuff, but I'm really just trying to highlight key areas. There was a legal debt collection process. It was initiated out of the blue by a company called Revco. Yeah, I believe it was Revco. And I was surprised by it because I knew that I was in discussions with CIFA at the time. And Repcon said, you know, well, I don't think we as Repcon can proceed with this, because CIFA knows that as long as there's something on the table, they can't start going for restitution. So I then had this back and forth with CIFA. So then Mr. Sigama, I think, was taking the lead in this process. And he was insinuating, and it's interesting because he was in that meeting of December the 10th, where we had all collectively decided to go the NPA route with the supplier. Mr. Sigama was actually taking the lead because I was insisting that I know who is telling Revcon, or who is asking Revcon within CIFA to go ahead with this debt collection process. And despite sending, the Revcon said, no, please send us proof that you are actually in discussion with CIFA, which I did. But Mr. Sigama just kept saying, no, it's fine, just continue with it. And Revcon had a problem with that. And they told me that this is one of the problems that they continually have with CIFA, that CIFA is having an ongoing process with their company, and at the same time, they're taking legal action against the company. In my thinking, I was thinking that maybe it's because CIFA has got so many departments. They know that there's a loan that is outstanding, and that loan right now is in default, despite the fact that it has been discussed, the matter has been discussed at what I perceive of executive level. But they told me that this is one of the problems that they have. And the other thing that I was picking up with this process, with this Revcon process, is that initially they were calling me from an environment, a recorded call environment, where the call is recorded, et cetera, and it tells you and all that. Then after I had started communicating with them and REFCON and highlighting my problems with this entire process and obviously with them suggesting that I send them proof. I've just made a bit of an error here. After I had started with this process with REFCON and going back and forth with them, calls started coming in that were not in the usual controlled call environment. I was getting calls from people's cell phones. It should be this person, it should be that person, all of them coming from REFCON. And each one having a different story. No, but we have to do it. All this. I said, but who are you? Because I've already started the process with, I believe the gentleman's name was Frank or Franco. And, you know, they were calling me from private numbers. And I already had a problem. And I think that is when I started suspecting that there was something untoward about this process. And I highlighted this in a letter to the minister that something is going on at FIFA. I'm having discussions with them. All of a sudden, there's a debt collection process, and that debt collection process is flawed. Can she look into it? And I do believe there was a response from her office that there were two people who were going to look into the matter, but that never happened. Then after that, there was another player. REFCON was now out of the picture for whatever reason. There was another player, a company called HW Teron, you know, that started sending me letters, again debt collection letters. Letters in much the same way that REFCON had, but they had also served me with the possibility of suing me in a court of law. That did take place. We appeared in court, and this is where the court process now starts with this company, and we are there in court. And I decided I was just going to talk to attorneys. I was not going to get an attorney represent me, because I realized that with some of the superior courts, it's open court. You can just basically state your case and write an affidavit, etc., 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 which is what I did. But what was interesting was on the court date with the attorney, the lawyer who appeared in front of the judge had said that there was something that I hadn't filed properly, and that we would need to discuss it outside of court, which we did. And he was actually quite frazzled, and he said to me, "No, you know what? I was called in the 11th hour to do this. The company HW Teron called me in the 11th hour, and I don't quite, sort of like he didn't quite have the facts. He's only just sort of like perused the documents. He said to me that, in fact, this company is a new, this is FIFA's new company or new law firm, he thinks, because this particular company, this HW Teron company, actually does RF cases. I didn't quite know what that meant, but I made a mental note of it. And other people say, no, then he left. Afterwards, he went back into court and just said, you know, he's asking for a postponement, which was granted. And then he left, I suppose. He was not ready to actually be in court. Like I said, it was pounced on him in the 11th hour. I was then told that it is likely that RF, what they meant by RF was RAF, which is Road Accident Funds, because generally these type of lawyers, that's what they handle. Whatever that means. But anyway, on the 7th of September, and this is when the case was like sort of like dead and buried, and there was nothing coming from CIFA, despite the newspaper articles that were coming out in the Mail and Guardian, where CIFA was stating to the investigative reporter that no, the matter is sub judice, whatever, and they can't comment on the case. So 7th of September, or a few days before then, I get an email from HW Tehran, the same company, saying that we're back on the roll for the 7th of September. And they were asking me if, well, a couple of days later, they then say to me, they can't find my affidavit or my sworn affidavit. Can I help them? They've misplaced theirs, or they've lost theirs, whatever the case may be. So I started wondering, should I really do it? Because I already suspect that this law firm is not altogether there from the first experience we had in court. Should I really provide this to them? And I sort of like waited it out. That's when I started asking. I wrote a letter. That's what prompted me actually to write a letter to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee. What I had wanted from that letter, what I was seeking, was whether this is actually a law firm on CIFA's books, because I do not believe with this type of chaotic behavior that I am seeing from the firm, that they handle financial matters, and that's where that was the entry point. Can you just check out this law firm and find out from CIFA? Because I was even beginning to think that it was a clique within CIFA that had its own agenda, in the same way that it was a clique in CIFA that was deciding to go the legal debt collection process, when in fact we were in discussions with CIFA itself. That's what prompted me to ask you, Chairperson, to sort of like, can you look into this? It's because the date of that 7th of September was fast approaching. And that's when I got a letter back from yourself saying that, you had asked and requested that a moratorium be put on litigation. I'm not really worried about the moratorium on litigation. My main issue was this particular law firm, because I was already in a legal process with CIFA, an ongoing court process with CIFA. The other issue that in court now, we do appear in court on the 7th of September. I decided I'd have to go there, because I figured I'd run into problems with the court system if I did not appear. At this second court appearance, W.H. Tehran was represented by another very young attorney with an assistant with her. I can't remember what her name was. And she had said that what I had submitted, the intent to defend submission, had not been lodged properly through the court system. So the judge just asked us to talk outside. Do we want a postponement? Let's just sort of like discuss it and then come back. So we walked out, and I talked to her, and I knew from the get-go that she too had been called in the last minute, because I kept asking her about documentation, and she kept telling me the documentation was there, and I said, the documentation is not there, the documentation is not complete. And she kept making erratic references to points in the documentation. And I wanted to ask her if she was also called in the last minute, but I just left it at that. And she said, okay, fine, I think we need to proceed. I said, I don't care what it is you want to do. I'm just letting you know that I'm surprised that we are actually here in court, because I thought maybe by now CIFA would have told you that there has been a request to put a moratorium on litigation, but that's fine. We went back into court, and excuse me, and they continued. She continued with the, I suppose, and now it's the trial. I don't know. She continued with the process, and before she had finished, that's when the judge said that what they have presented as BIFA and as HW Tehran is materially flawed, and that they know it, and he does not understand why they would even bring it into his court. Apparently, even the affidavit, which I found interesting, because that affidavit came from Paul Maboa, who I do know has a legal background or is a lawyer, I'm not sure, came from Paul Maboa, and the judge was completely not willing to have it admissible in his court, because as far as he was concerned, it came from the T-boy and at CIFA. So even the documentation, the way in which they are doing things, take someone who's a layman, as far as I'm concerned, and I could pick up that something is just not right with the way in which this whole thing is unfolding. But obviously, I wouldn't say I was surprised, to be honest. But I was happy at the outcome, and I was happy at the fact that they made a laughing stock of themselves in court, and that other attorneys were amused at what they were doing, because what they were doing apparently is actually not done in a court of law in South Africa, and the judge made that very clear. And then when he called me, he said, what I've been saying to this lady all this time is that, you know, I'm denying the summary judgment. I'm denying on you basically heard what I had said to her, and I'm denying it without cost, meaning that I don't pick up any cost. Because it seems that in this entire charade, legal charade that CIFA was putting on, that they were expecting that I would pay or foot the bill for them going in and out of court. But what I found even more silly and more sinister was the fact that they would leave or give a law firm as a financial services company or a financial services institution that handles government money in the billions of rands, they would leave this type of legal process to these type of attorneys. Like I had been saying to you, Madam Chairperson, can these lawyers be checked out, because of my gut feeling and my previous experience with them in a court of law? So moving forward from the discussion with the judge was that this time I should get proper counsel. I should get real lawyers for the actual case, because what it looks like is that CIFA, and this is why they were told that what they presented was materially flawed, is they were trying to sneak in two affidavits for two different cases, where one, they were thinking that they would quickly get a summary judgment. And I'm saying this because it was explained to me by some of the lawyers who were there, who found this quite amusing, and they were now explaining to me after court what the judge meant. That they were trying to sneak in the summary judgment, and yet there was another matter, I think they'd written an affidavit on, or they presented an affidavit for, which is really the main matter. I can't really tell why summary judgment wouldn't be the main matter, but anyway, that's the legal system. I'm not a lawyer, but I was not prepared to actually look for a lawyer for this legal charade of theirs. And so that's where we're at, whereby I am going to be, or I've already sought legal counsel on the matter, and we're going to get the court transcript of this last case, and obviously highlighting some of the issues that I had with dealing with this whole legal debt collection process. That has been it's very, very summarized because I mean, I think it would form a thesis. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We welcome the other two ladies who are also enterprises with issues with paper. I'm not going to. Can I check one thing?
Thank you so much. I was advising that maybe the enterprises when they make their presentation, they must not just go too general, telling us the date of court, when to court, the judge said that, the lawyer said this. They must formalize their complaint. What is the main problem they are encountering against CIFA? Because I don't want to pretend like we're in the Commission of Inquiry or we're in court where we need details and everything. So they must try to be short, straight to the point so that we mustn't lose focus. Thank you, General.
Thank you. Mr.
Kelly,
follow that approach in making the presentation. Just introduce yourself. Is the issue between your company and CIFA?
Good morning. My name is Marta Bello Adele. I'm from Bethlehem. My encounter started last year, 2016, April 10th, when my husband approached CIFA. He was the main applicant.
He was the main applicant of the CIFA. That time I was working. And the official who was handling the application came to us. That time we were staying in Senegal, a small town. So she came to see us, advised that because he's a man, he won't be funded. So advised that I resign from the job that I was working at to resign.
The name of the company, please.
CIFA.
No.
Big discount supermarket. It was in August when she came to see us. Then I put notice for 3 months that I'll wait till end of November 2016 because she advised us in such a way that I see there will be help for my husband if I'm part of the application. Then later that year, the application went through, everything went right. The last message that I got from her email was that I'm finalizing the application, I'll revert back to you. Till January, when she resigned, I think she resigned this year, 2017, I'm not sure the month. Then we went to Protea Hotel in Clarence, under CEDA. They told us that there's a meeting, the CIFA people will be there. Then I presented my case, since my application is hanging from last year and I'm at home. Then the provincial manager of Free State was there also, said, okay, we'll continue the application. We'll just change the dates because now it's last year application. We'll carry on from there. You must just bring your shop, financial statements, and other things that we need so that it can continue this year. We find a shop in Bethlehem because they said they're not going to find small town. We left our own property in Senegal. We rented it out. We moved to Bethlehem where we found a shop in town. And then that time we put only 15,000 to hold a shop. because he came himself to assess if the shop is right, is at the right spot and is the right shop to open. And then after he left, he said, you can sign the contract and pay deposit of the shop. We paid 22,000 rand deposit, 22,500 deposit. And since then, every month we pay the rent. We bought the equipment that's worth 140,500. Shelving, fridges, and counters, they are just there in the shop, and put alarm system, we renovate and brand the shop. We were just asking for only 1 million there to put the stock in. And since then, we keep on writing emails. What is the delay? I think about April, we wrote emails. What is the delay? Why the application is taking so long? We want to start at least by May, because now the rent is high there. And plus, we're renting out in Bethlehem and paying the flat. We got the answer in July, on the 28th, it was Friday. The provincial manager of Free State just phoned me, told me, your application is declined. I say, how? After I paid so many, 22,500 for rent, it's almost 135,000 that I put on the rent. Why the application is declined? He say, I don't know. I don't have reasons. I'll phone Monday. Then I decided to write to Mr. Dawn. I just checked, you know, I find Mr. Dawn email, I write appeal. I say, but I put money already on this project now. The application is declined. I don't even know why the application is declined. I was just told telephonically. He just told me, no, my colleague will sort out your problem. She sent me email saying only they'll talk with the region and they'll repackage my proposal. Then after them, the emails that came, the last response was on the 21st from provincial manager of Free State saying the reasons why my application was declined is because my cash flow don't show that I'll afford. I said, but meanwhile, you people keep on saying I must keep on paying the rent. Why you didn't stop you from the beginning to put 135,000 rent on the rent plus to buy equipment that worth 140,000 to be just lying there, and I pay the rent for a shop that is not even operating for so many months. Then Ms. Salome came back to me on the 23 August. She said there's nothing the COVID can do because I fail affordability test. I don't know what is that thing. Then I decided to Google. That's how I find Mebengu. I just write to her because I got no money. My money is lying there. And I signed a contract for 5 years. And they even asked me, there's a letter that came before they declined that I must ask the landlord to extend the contract of the shop. And now I'm in the middle of this. I don't even know. I did talk to him last week. He said, but you must go court because now you signed the contract. We cannot keep your things inside our building. You must see how you find a buyer or you put somebody to take over the contract. I went all over. I tried the Chinese people to buy, but they don't want to buy. They say they can only give me 80,000. They don't want to buy because it got no stock. Mine is just like that. I got no money. I got no money to pay the rent of the flat. My equipment might be even auctioned because he told me we're going to take from you the same equipment to pay off this contract because we cannot use the breach of contract. You can't just remove your things and then who's going to take over and sign the contract. So I told him, you can take me to court. I'll tell them I got no money. I don't know what to do. I'm just like this. I got no money. I told them they can take it. Even, I don't know, my heart just gets sore because that money I worked hard for it. And it's like that. Oh. I don't know what to do.
need to open the shop. Now my money is on a red card for it. I lost it. My story ended with this.
These are the kind of stories that we hear when we are on overtime. We ourselves end up crying. Can we get to the next presenter? Mabota, Trading Enterprise.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Dora Mambotla Masua. I'm from Bloemfontein. I'm working as a contractor for the RDP houses in Khalif district in Free State. In 2013, I've got the project for 129 houses from the government of Free State. It was incomplete houses. So because they were not having enough cash, 72 of them, it was the houses which I was supposed to start it afresh. So I approached FIFA in June. I get the funding in August. After I get the funding, I managed to build 32 houses. The 40 houses, the department was coming to me and then told me that, no, you get the site. And the site were there, but they didn't give me a site there. From that August up until I finished the 32 in mid-November. By December, I've got a memorandum which was signed by the NEC saying that I must be relocated. And by that time, when I was relocated, now this debt of FIFA was still going up. Then I signed a new contract with the department in February 2015. Then I tell FIFA about it. Every time when I was doing anything, if anything was happening in the department, I was going to FIFA's office and writing the letter, this is happening and what is happening. And then by July, I started to build the 40 foundations. And the department, by that time, they were not paying for it. I made FIFA aware, the Office of FIFA and Bloemfontein aware that the department is not paying for it. And now that, because I just bought the materials for 72 houses in Bloemfontein, now they just moved me from Bloemfontein to Eden. Some of the materials, especially the cement, get expired. And some of my material was stolen from the site because we're no more at the site. We just hired the locals to look after the material. Was stolen. Then I was supposed to get the transport by myself to take this material from Bloemfontein, about 50 something kilos, to Edinburgh. So I struggled. Because I was using only my one bike and the trailer to take this, all these things. While I was at Edinburgh, I managed to finish 40 foundations. And then I noticed FIFA too writing that. Because the money now is not enough, I'm going to pay part of second month, and then the other one I'll buy some of the material. Then I sent the letter, but I didn't get any response. By the end of November 2015, I already managed to build 32 houses. Then by that time, the department was not paying for it, and I was owing the supplier because the money for FIFA was not enough anymore. And then I read the letter to the first office. And then they promised me that the lady whom I was meeting with at the first office promised me that everything they take it to the head office of the city. And then in January, when I was supposed to go back on site, I found that my cement was not there. All my equipment, I was using my own equipment.
It was so good. And my bike got an accident. I told Sipa and his husband, but I'm having problem. Why can't they maybe give me $500,000 from Sipa so that I can finish the project? But in February last year, I got a sermon. It was 2 sermons. The other one was on my company's name. The other one was on my name. And when I take the money from people, they make my husband surprise. He couldn't even have a house. He couldn't attach there. Then in April, I write to the HOD of our department. I asked him to interview me because now I did them to sell them. They say, no, that's not their problem. I keep on talking to Sipa. They even give me the phone number for Mr. Henderson Matopa and Sipa to talk to him. And I write him a letter that Matopa, can you please just talk to your people to uplift this into ICT program? Because I cannot get the money anywhere because of this ICT. Even the people from the ministerial, when I ask them about the help, they say no. We have been listed with a lot of money, so we cannot help you. Now in July this year, I did sign a contract again for those 40 houses, but no one is willing to help me because of this ICT thing. And by July, before I met with the committee on my side, the sheriff were harassing me. Now and then the kids are on my house. Wanting to take all my furniture. As I speak now, I don't have to be the car. Because I have met, before I met people, I was able to do the things. I get the job, but I can't work because I don't have money. By last year, my tax clearance was expired. I didn't have the money to pay the SARS because I was owing SARS. Even now, I'm still owing SARS because I don't have that money to pay SARS. So really, this thing has frustrated me. Even in my house, it's so more alright. Asking the committee if please they can interview and see how can they help me. Because even the interest on SIPA is too much for me.
Important issues that are being the first one is the development aspect of SMMP. Who between the Department of Small Business, SEDA and SEPA create a mentoring role to small businesses. To guide small businesses on contractual matters, to guide small businesses against being elbowed in a sense that I'm self-allocated the site that I work on. My quotations and my calculations are based on that site. After I have entered into the contract, I find myself having to relocate to the site or relocate my workforce to another site, which comes with a cost. This also relates to some of the letters that we talked about, the issue of the Ganta, three-state project, and Chad, who feel aggrieved that the mining companies are asking them to, there is an amendment in the original contract which doesn't take cost involved. So I want us, when we are discussing this matter, to look carefully as to who is responsible for protecting the interests of small businesses and guiding small businesses on contractual and legal matters. The second issue, which organization is responsible for taking the legal matters of small businesses when they are now taken to court by whoever? I also want to look at that matter in relation to the delay by the department in establishing the National Small Business Advisory Council, which was going to advise the minister on what challenges are faced by small businesses, because the personnel in the Department of Small Business cannot represent and guide the minister on challenges faced by small businesses. The personnel in SEPA cannot do that. The personnel in SEDA cannot do that. The minister cannot know all the challenges that are affecting small businesses. Small businesses need to be represented by a particular structure which can guide and say, these are our needs and this is how we think can be resolved. In the absence of the National Small Business Advisory Council, who brings these matters up? Because now the situation is at an explosive level and the small businesses are feeling the pressure and they are approaching the portfolio committee. The letter written by Mendy was a very angry letter. After having written to her a short hair that hair, she will be invited. She still wrote another letter, which was very angry. Not even angry to the department alone, but angry even to the members of this portfolio committee that everything and all these things are happening under our nose. They've been in the newspapers and we've done nothing. I spent an hour with her on the phone to calm her down, to also apologize that we missed it, that we didn't see it, and to counsel her. The third issue is, who is responsible for counseling? These are not the only ones that are crying. Most of the people that we meet on oversight share tears. So, my guidance to the portfolio committee members is that, yes, interact with the stories that are being told here, but also broaden that and link it to the actual situation, one, of the gaps in the system and the support system that are being provided, and also slow response by the department in putting in place the necessary structures that are required in order to provide adequate services. Not only the National Small Business Advisory Council, the Cooperative Development Agency, the Cooperative Development, the Cooperative Academy, the Cooperative Development Bank, all those necessary structures that are important for providing the nurturing aspect in small businesses. The technical skill training that is not there. When we are discussing all these things, we must take all those factors into consideration. I am going to advise that we have fresh tea there. Instead of having a break, maybe we can grab a cup of tea and come back and continue the meeting, because they are catching their flight.
Clarity that I would want here is noting that this CIFA and CIDA and the Small Business Development, the Department of Small Business is a developmental department. Developmental in order to address the plight of the poor and the how does that developmental aspect inform how CIFA and CIDA and the department assist their clients? Because once that word developmental falls off the radar, then it means they may as well have gone to a bank. So, that's one question. And then the second question is, with the specific how does CIFA propose to resolve the issues? Thanks, colleagues.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, I think we're all saddened by what we hear today. And Andy has communicated extensively by phone and by email, and I'm sorry that it's taken so long to for you to be able to air your story before the portfolio committee. But I think that the issue here, as Honourable Abbas said, is the developmental aspect of the loans procedure that is followed by CIFA. In other words, the vetting of the beneficiary all the way through to the post-loan support that is provided or not provided to the borrower. And the instance of the shot in Bethlehem is particularly strange in the sense that you obviously given an indication that the loan was forthcoming, otherwise you wouldn't have taken a lease in that shot. But yet, having paid 6 months' lease, the loan was then turned out. So something seems to be going wrong in terms of the process of loan granting and the communication between the CIFA and the client as to when they should do certain things and when they should not do certain things. It's a relationship between the ultimate client as well as the third parties involved. In your case, it would be bought the equipment from the landlord and so on. In the case of Europe, we heard that story when we were in Tuesday. And again, as the chairperson says, it's just sad that the relationship that was developed with between CIFA and the Department of Human Settlements was such that you as the small guy was pushed around. You had to take the fall for a mistake that was made by the department. Now, the bottom line is that CIFA's impairments on its direct loan book are way, way too high. They're in the 60 percentile. Now, whatever it says about the developmental agenda of CIFA, no developmental institution can justify that degree of impairment. And I think that the stories that we're hearing today indicate that there's a systemic problem in the way in which loans are granted and managed. Not just the granting of the loan, but the management of those loans. And I think that what would be vitally important is for CIFA to be able to tell us when it's their turn to present, maybe in terms of the forensic report, what actually has gone wrong with all those loans? Why are they impaired? Is it the sort of stories that we're hearing today? Is it because the customers of their customers are not paid? In other words, it's a cash flow problem. Because ultimately, that's what we're talking about. And what it plans to do about it. So I think it's important to hear CIFA's side of the story in terms of all three of these individual cases. We may not get the detail because the account manager at CIFA, who is responsible for managing that, may not be here, but I know that the CEO is personally involved in certainly in the Razor's Gap project that we communicated about. So account management is critical. And as far as banks are concerned, you know, one of the reasons why banks have impairment rates of the low single digits, is because of their due diligence and their account management. Everybody, you know, criticizes banks for not lending money. But they're also protecting their depositors. And now the depositors in the context of CIFA are the taxpayers. The taxpayers are actually your depositors. And yet you are throwing money down the drain, and the people who are suffering are the small businesses. So there's something systemically wrong here, which I think this committee has an obligation to try and get to the bottom. And the board of CIFA has to get to the bottom of it. trading negligence and an effective, you know, it itself could be put into administration because of the way in which it's abusing its shareholders' funds. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, I was a little bit late. I was up. But it's a sad story. And, you know, in Bloemfontein, we also heard the woman, what was her name?
Rita.
Redmill, yeah. About the bully tactics that CFAR is using as a strategy to bully, there's no other word than to bully small businesses. And as my colleague just said, it's a waste of taxpayers' money. They use taxpayers' money as if it's their own, and they act as little gods over the small businesses. And wherever I go, especially in the rural areas. You know, CFAR is not to be seen. And though the poor people that's supposed to, our poor people that's supposed to start this new businesses, CFAR is nowhere to see. CEDA is nowhere to see. Small Business Department is nowhere to see. The only time you see small business is when the minister is grandstanding somewhere and there's a big banner that say small business is big business. But it's all about politics. And the community that must benefit from this department, they are standing far, far in the queue. And I'm very concerned about Manche. It's actually a disgrace if you listen to this story. And I can't believe that a government and government officials, because they government officials that's paid by the taxpayers' money, they're only worried about their own pay at the end of the month. They don't worry about the future of businesses, small businesses like this. And if we, I mean, in your introduction speech this morning, we talked about 9 million jobs that must be created by this department. Or they must have a sort of a influence in creating this 9 million jobs. There's no way with attitudes like this that we will ever reach even anything above 1% of that 9 million job creation. So, Madam Chair, this department is sick, and I don't think there's medicine for this. It's like a it's like a cancer that you can't heal. There's no way. And you know, when especially this diabetes patients will tell you, if your leg don't want to heal, you must cut it off. That's the only way. And I think we're on that stage where the ruling party must make a decision about this department, because it's not working. It just brings tears and sorrow, and you know, the bully tactics, it's not on. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, everybody. It's very sad because the accounting officer is right here. It was going to be better if she was here for her to have a first-hand information and see these experiences, you know, when people will be crying as they are crying. What I want to know is CIPA having the standard requirements that the applicants are to follow when they are applying for this loan? Why am I asking that if my spouse would have applied and then the wife would be advised to leave her job, to resign, and
also to relocate. Because my understanding, as you are working for the government, you are to understand the program of the government. The government is about rural development. So if you say we can't fund you because you are in a small area, then you are to go to a bigger area. Where is that coming from? Is it as per the standards that are there in terms of these applicants and the program of the government in terms of your rural development? And I understand that not long COTA adopted the integrated urban development framework. So as there's that in terms of urbanizing our towns. So we are to encourage if small towns are applying in adding value in terms of the program of the government that is in place. So my question is there, what are the standard requirements? If we are, we put our people in misery, we make wives to resign, because as much as we understand that women, yes, are to be assisted as the speaking with disadvantage, we understand that, you know. But at the very same time, we've got a constitutional obligation, because if every citizen rights in terms of rights, people having to access opportunities, you know, if you are a man, and we understand that women, indeed we have prioritized women and babies, but men can also be assisted, I think.
Whenever we drive over site and we hear the heartbreaking stories that we had, such as we had this morning, about how Sifa is dealing with people who are trying to get into business, a picture is painted of a department full of people who are cruel and heartless. People who should maybe be taken on a workshop dealing with Ubuntu. And the way small businesses are treated, the way people who are trying to make a living are treated, is not fair, it's not right. And I think she has been condemned. Now, when you hear about people being advised by a SIFA official to resign from the job, where do they get that? You ask a person to resign from a job and you have not even approved the loan. Now, afterwards, that person's loan has not been approved and he has been advised to resign from their job. Who's going to look after them? When they lose properties, when they lose assets, when they lose houses, SIFA is not there. We must find a way, Chairperson, I think that SIFA officials must take responsibility for their carelessness. They must take responsibility. Yeah. People are advised to sign contracts and they are not given money or advance to service those contracts. Maybe we should advise SIFA Chairperson that nobody must be advised to sign the job, to learn the job, but, or sign the contract, particularly before a loan has been approved. Now, you hear these stories, people are losing houses, people are threatened by sheriffs, and the same officials are sleeping peacefully at home. They're sleeping at home, no worries. And the people who acted on their advice are unable to rest. So, you must find a way of making SIFA accountable for the bad advices that they're giving the client. And the department, government departments must also shape up. Because if a person is given houses to build and they are not paid back on time, to build, obviously, they are going to need loans. Because departments are not paying, they don't have money to pay them their own loans. So I think we need to also
challenge the department about not complying with the 30-day requirement that all departments must abide by. So I want to appeal to CIFA that they should have some care and compassion. Maybe it's the first time they hear things like this because they're not going from province to province. We just go from province to province. We see people crying, weeping all the time. And when you hear the stories and you realize that the people that they've been dealing with have no help, they don't care. And I think this definitely has to, must find a way of stopping it, and they must take responsibility. Anybody who tells a person to resign their job and that person does not get a contract, they don't have money to pay back their debt, then people must step in and do something because those people acted on their own.
And the frustration. So I was reluctant to have my input. I wanted the CIFA to respond first. So that I mustn't respond out of one side. I wanted also CIFA to be given a chance to respond. But however, if the chair chose us to ask clarity. I will do so. So with these three enterprises with us here, I want to tell CIFA that this is just a drop of just a drop to the big pool of ocean problems and frustration within the SMME and the corporation. This is nothing. This is what we just pick up where we went to the provinces. So it's a national crisis which has been caused by CIFA and the Department of Small Business. Which in the meantime, if you can just put an advert in the newspaper or in the print and in the radios, that people who have problems with CIFA, I believe you can see tons of the problems. So the other clarification question I wanted from the discount is when you said, because I had the reference, said you were advised to resign, in order the loan must come through you because your husband was not qualifying. Is it CIFA advise you to resign and to relocate in writing? Okay. So the other question which is coming to CIFA question is the consistency of CIFA in terms of the loan interest. When we visit the oversight there, we find the same area, people have different interest charge rate percentage. Some they are prime plus 3, some they are 21%. So we just want to know what is the scale to give people such a huge interest. And the strategy of CIFA, what is the reason of CIFA of using the middleman between the SMEs and cooperatives? What is the reason behind that? The other question we want to know from CIFA, it's a state-owned entity. Why is CIFA? I think the creation of CIFA was trying to avoid the private banks. But it's now it's like the same. CIFA is like now a private bank. Some of the banks are giving you less interest than CIFA. So which means it is now, like now CIFA is a tool to suffocate small business and cooperatives too. So I'm very much concerned. I want to know why are they acting like they are private company, not acting as a state-owned entity. So I will go also to the department chairperson. The formation of this department was, the idea was wrong, but unfortunately, the people who are running the department, who are working, is a very total uncommitted wrong people. The department was the DTI. After DTI, the government said, no, let's try to help the poor by forming the department called Economic Development. It didn't work. Now the department said, let's make a special department for the small businesses. They created that thing. It's now the third year since its creation. There's no difference. The mortality rate of the cooperatives are sky shooting. The SMMEs, here are they, being frustrated after the formation of that department. So I think, let me put politics here. The ANC government has a good mind itself of helping the people. But unfortunately, this thing of the cadre deployment is killing itself. Because on the budget of the 3 billion of the small business, there is a 1 billion which is going for the operational expenditure, payment of the salaries of the ministers, workers, and everything. If this department was not available, even if we give 1 billion as a grant to the small business or to the cooperatives, we're going to see a turnaround. But the money is wasted by these many departments. If the department were there to do the proper job, it was going to be okay. Out of the 3 billion allocated, it's only 2 billion to see all the cooperatives and small businesses. And which is, it can't work. The model can't work. Why I'm saying this is a cadre deployment strategy. I met the DG on Monday at the airport. The DG, I'm coming to the meeting. He said, no, I'm going to Durban to address, it's like there's a conference or workshop, I don't know. I said, no, DG, we're going to meet the CIFA there. We have a problem with CIFA. She said, no, I know it was long schedule and everything. Why? Because she's not committed. Secure deployment issues. She has set salaries and everything. She doesn't care about what's happening within the department and the people and the CIFA. She should have been here to listen what we're talking. But she chose to go there and address a paper because she's an academic, she's a professor. They believe in papers addressing so that they can get another honorary degree. This department doesn't need anybody who is educated like a doctor or a professor. It needs anybody with a heart to work for the poor people, who can feel the grievances of the poor people. But it's unfortunately, we're going to finish this term, 5 years. Nothing will happen. And the people were going to say it was a wrong move to make this department. One is not, the move was right, but the people to implement. ANC doesn't have those people. It's just a bunch of losers and hooligans there, wasting state money. So we must just come here. Everywhere we are going, people are suffering. Some of the projects, they are white elephant. We saw them. Money pumped. 400 cooperatives were funded. We ask simple question to the department. Give us those departments, those cooperatives. Hey, we don't know where those cooperatives. But the money is gone. Then we must clap hands and we say, no, the government is doing a good job. It's failing. And 2019 is coming. We're going to campaign, we opposition party, about this. So, the CIFA and CIDA, I don't know what can we do to you to assist that we must help the poor people. Your own strategy is not to help the poor people. It's failing the poor people at times. You know, during the apartheid time, they have cooperatives. The Afrikaners, when they took this country, they had cooperatives funded by government. And some of the cooperatives are still very strong. We have the NTK in Limpopo called Nord Transvaal Cooperative. Yeah, very strong. But what about in our government now? We even make this department special for that. Nothing is happening. So next time we will withdraw and not come to these meetings of just coming here to talk something which will not happen. So unfortunately the minister is not here, but the deputy minister is here. It's our concern. We've been voted by people who come here, deputy minister. But you can see people are crying in front of you, more especially women. And your government said looks after women. They're crying. They're in debt today because of this CIFA. So we need a turnaround strategy which is very fast. So that we don't want, now I don't want to be part of saying you were them, Lawuzi, you were not doing anything. I would say you must go and take the records. I spoke. This is very, very bad, Chapeza. This is very bad. You see, people are suffering. The strategy of government are there to uplift their life. You find the CIFA is busy taking their cars, their houses. They don't care. We try to advise for them to put a moratorium. Nobody's caring. Up to the minister, they write the letter that it's impossible. Let CIFA go on and exploit our people. As a minister, we have a letter. This is the letter from the minister, which is telling these people that the CIFA must go on. No political interference while people are suffering. It's very wrong, Chapter. Thank you very much. But I reserve my comment. I would like to hear CIFA's comment. Maybe I will have some questions to ask, but that's my statement. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me also the manner in which the agenda of the meeting was carefully thought. If you are going to be discussing with CIFA a forensic, their own forensic investigation, are you going to assist CIFA to see a bigger picture, or you are just going to confine yourself on the forensic audit report that they are presenting? If you are going to be engaging with CIFA and getting their response on the letter that was written by the portfolio committee asking CIFA to put a moratorium on litigation, are you going to just go into that matter without broadening the understanding of CIFA? And my logic was, afford CIFA an opportunity to hear for themselves, which is why the three enterprises were brought here using the budget of the portfolio committee, because the portfolio committee knows about this issue.
And my thinking as the chair of this committee is that we are not on the same page in terms of understanding the issue. The department, CIFA and CIDA are on another page. We are on a different page. So let us afford them an opportunity to hear what informs the request to put a moratorium and what informs us to say there must be a forensic investigation. What informs us to stand up in Parliament and present our report, our oversight report, in the manner that we did, so that we are not misunderstood. Also, the selection of the people who are coming here is very strategic. We brought only women. We could have brought people from SHAP, disabled people, but we have been raising the issue of SHAP. Yes. Yes. And we are saying government can't have policies that exist in paper, and stand up to speak on those policies as if it's political rhetoric. Policies of government are there to be implemented, and we are here to ensure that those policies are implemented. So, I did not afford FIFA an opportunity to speak after this presentation, because I am affording them an opportunity to hear. The portfolio committee should only interact with and then ask questions that are relevant to FIFA, the department, and CIDA when we are addressing those issues with them. At this moment, confine your interaction to this. And CIFA and the department must open their ears very widely, because we are coming to them. After this, we are coming to them to then address the issues that they listened to, This is not a manufactured situation by the portfolio committee. We had people, they were there, they spoke for themselves. Because it's very, very easy to politicize issues and not see the issue, but see the portfolio committee as a problem. Here we want CIFA and the department to see issues that need to be addressed and not to see the portfolio committee as a problem. So you are free to comment and respond to those issues that you think are within your capacity to respond, because some of the issues that are raised here don't need your response. Any response, or if you don't have response on issues raised, anything, any comments to make?
Having listened to Ome and also members of the portfolio committee on what they have seen on the oversight tour trip, it begs the question whether an entity like FIFA, and I think I'm just going to echo what Mr. Kruger, or the Honorable Kruger, said,
and basically everybody. It begs the question whether such an entity can be given such latitude to self-assess, to assess themselves. I'm wondering, and I'd really like to know, maybe they've been able to dig deep and look at themselves, but I'm just wondering whether such an entity should actually even have been given the podium. Maybe I'm speaking out of anger and out of turn here, Chairperson. Been given the podium to actually self-assess themselves as opposed to just, you know, going for the jugular and having, like you had mentioned, the Auditor General or even the Portfolio Committee themselves saying, this is what we think of you and these are our recommendations. I'm just worried. I think it's because of the tears. I was just looking at myself and knowing that it seems to be a 90% issue. It's not just myself. In fact, when I was talking to you, I think I said I thought I was the only show in town, the only person who was experiencing this type of thing at this level. It is disgusting. It is disheartening. And I think it is criminal that we have such an entity that is allowed to exist. Maybe it's just me coming from Botswana, I don't know. But having such an entity being allowed to exist and then even being given, afforded the floor in Parliament to actually give us their own assessment of themselves. These kind of people should have been rooted out. I don't think South Africa has a place for this type. We can't afford it. South Africa cannot afford entities like SIFA. I have not interacted that much with the Department of Small Business. I know it is new. I thought maybe they're trying to find their feet. So I narrowed my focus. My focus is very, very focused. I suppose it's just it's SIFA centric. And it is not just a matter. I think sometimes we try to give too much benefit of the doubt. When you see things are totally wrong and totally off course, we still have this thing of coming back and saying, no, maybe let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Till when? Till there's no more money? Or till 100% of all the people who have been funded go to court? Till when? When do we decide that enough is enough with entities like SIFA? And I'm now saying this only because I realize again that I'm not the only show in town. I thought maybe it's a once-off thing, that one or two or three companies. But even four or five companies having these kinds of problems, is five companies too many to be having such a problem? People being told to resign. People having things being attached. And SIFA just not giving a damn. This is what I picked up about SIFA, that they don't care. I have interacted with SIFA's executives. I was trying to listen to what my two sisters here were saying, but I know that it is SIFA. It is the heartbeat of SIFA because I was interacting with SIFA's executives. Takani knows that I was sent email after email after email after email. Really, I've sent email after email after email. And instead, what they decide to do, they decide to have a little sideshow where they are saying, no, we know that you are talking about, please don't take this for this, that, and the other. And then they just continue. This is why when I wrote that angry letter, it's because there's also this thing that, you know, with Africans, just say you're sorry or just sort of whatever, you know, just, just butter them up. They'll understand that. You know, they'll understand, because that's what we're made to understand, but okay, no, so it must be that. But then this is how SIFA does it. I really do not believe there can be anything good that comes out of the SIFA audit of themselves. The only audit that can come is an audit that comes from themselves as a portfolio committee and possibly the Auditor General. But coming from SIFA, knowing that I had a protracted 18, 20 month
thing of emails with them, took them to the papers, everything. But SIFA just did not care. So I don't know with people who've got that mindset, whether they really should be sitting amongst us. I really don't think so. I don't even think they should be sitting amongst us. The mindset is not there.
I hope your intervention will come up with solutions for people like us. And if I still kept to operate, they must at least make sure that they employ people who are able to can work faster and look at their application earlier and be able to tell you on time that you won't make it, or like the bank do. The bank will tell you in 2 days that you won't make it. Forget about application. They must be skillful enough to assess, to know what they're doing. Because if people can just tell you, relocate, go to another place, you put the money there, your equipment are lying there, you keep on telling them, you write emails, I'm paying $22,500, nothing is done. They keep on telling, pay the rent, pay the rent. You know, and I don't know, really, and I'm asking for committee. I'll be glad if the Good Samaritan here, if he can help me to open my shop, then I'll pick up from there and pay off that. Because I know if you're asking for the loan, you have to pay it. But I'm just frustrated that I got no money, I got nowhere to go. You are my last hope in Mbengu to come here. I just feel and pray that from one of you who can just help me to open my shop and pay off that debt and to start work than to sit and get more frustrated, then I'll be very glad.
Not a lot of money now, it's about 3.1 million. And people who are coming to help me, they think that they won't get anything. So if I can borrow the funds, because this coming Friday, they say they are terminating my project because I can't start on time. If I can please help me, so that I can maybe get another job and pay them, because I don't receive. They can just help me to get that money to start afresh again. Because the department I have even begin to write them to the premier, no one did responded to them. Even the HOD of human settlement, I write letters, no one did respond to them. Please, I'm making this plea to you. Can I give you an opportunity?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm humbled. I'm humbled. It's a question of ethics. It's a question of morality. More than a question of politics and of profits. It's things that go deep into our value system that increases the difference between the wealthy and the poor. What for me is even sadder
is the fact that we do not go to the people where they are. We shove and elbow them to where it's convenient for us. And so it's only the urban middle class that benefit. In the Federation for Small Business, which I chair, of which I'm a CEO, we see very clearly when we look at the papers of the national landscape how people go to the president's office, how BUSA and BLSA and NAPCOC and them all go and sit around the president's table with Gigaba and who is before him. But there's no voice for small business. Nobody represents small business. Nobody hears their ailments, as we've heard today, at personal and deep psychosocial level. Nobody speaks. Those people who sit at the presidency around the table in these meetings that we see are people there for self-interest. Yet, all of them, and even us here, will say the change in jobs, increase in wealth, will come from small business. Sit at the table, when we sit at the high table, it's just us in our Italian suits and our leather shoes from Brazil. And we forget that we were once barefoot in the rural area. It's not a party political thing, Madam Chair. It's a national. CEDA, from what I read about, and its formation, SIBA, is a corporate animal, managed by corporate animals, prepared for corporate careers. It's not grounded. The department, SIDA, the DSDV, we never supported, but as Democrats, with a small d, that's the we were handled. That's the cards we've got to play. We can't ignore government. $3 billion. $3 billion over 3 years, and we have these stories. Madam Chair, that's evil. I'm sad. I'm with you. My heart's with you. My heart's with so many that I know. All we ask, Madam Chair, of this committee and you is listen and listen deeply. And I know and I trust when we listen and we listen deeply, we will come to wise decisions. Not easy decisions, but wise decisions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
The reason for me to ask Ms. Alofisi is that she attend our meeting. She writes letters to us, raising issues that are affecting small business. But it's a constant reminder to us that this possibility is that the Small Business Act requires be an establishment of a national small business advisory council. They alerted us that the advent calling for nomination went out in August 2015. In September 2017. The National Small Business Advisory Council, which would have been at the center of being a voice for small businesses. But now percentage to both of cooperatives has been reduced to a structure that only focuses on the celebration of the International Cooperative Day. So that's where we are. Because what we are saying, we are not saying SIFA should not collect. What we are saying is that SIFA put a hold on that to give us space to talk about these issues, because this is what we find on the ground. That's what we have said. So, it's an ongoing process. We want to thank you. We apologize that you have gone through all these things. We treat you as an experiment. Hope that we have made the ability to actually unearth the things that you need to be focusing on. If we we are going to have different approaches. The approach that deals with the cases which is presented to us, and the approach that gives us the restructuring of the services that are provided. And when we talk restructuring of the services, we're starting with the department. Restructuring those services and partnerships to speak to the needs, self-needs, safer restructuring, funding models to speak to the needs, and CEDA restructuring with non-commercial partners to speak to the needs, including in the past. We think that there is a lot that we can do. Short-term intervention, medium-term intervention, and long-term intervention. Thank you very much. The committee secretary will assist you to go back home and we wish you all the best. We will keep in touch, Mark.
an organ and say you could be more indeed. So I read how to do it.
Somebody said he is reluctant to hire South Africans.
Really?
And they must, they should scrap this economic.